he's dribbling. And I mean, he's straight up palming the ball every time he dribbles. And now I understand that the carry is a very important part of our game. But I mean the ones that you got the full hand under the basketball. Those are the ones I need to eliminate. And it doesn't happen as often as Twitter will make you think, but I just want to eliminate it completely because a carry is in the rule book. Welcome back to the Kenny Beecham podcast. Today we got a mailbag, y'all. I opened the floor for y'all to ask me questions. I went onto Twitter and I said, mailbag episode coming soon. Ask away. NBA questions, non-NBA questions, and y'all showed out. We're actually trending on Twitter. Hashtag Ask KB. I bet there's a percentage of the world that was looking at them like, what is this? They need to tune into the Kenny Beecham podcast. That's all. Leave a like, subscribe. This should be fun. Now, I made maybe a minor mistake. I said, ask me NBA and non-NBA questions. And we got over 400 responses. Thank you to y'all that submitted a question. Majority, and I mean a big majority of them, were non-NBA centric, which is fine. You know what I'm saying? It's the Kenny Beecham podcast, not the NBA podcast. We might do NBA majority of the time, but it's a combination of both. So maybe if you're one of the people that are here for strictly basketball content, this might not be one for you. We do got hoops in here. Do not get me wrong, but we do jump around from hoops to some anime. Oh, look, I already see 30% of my viewers just dropped off. We talk anime. Oh, man. Anyway, I'm going to do what I got to do. And the reason I decided to do mailbag today is because I think we're at the part of the NBA season, or at least for me personally, where I am not learning anything anymore. The first months of the year, we're trying to figure out what teams look like, what's the cohesion rate on all of these organizations. And right now, I don't think I've learned anything new with a team, with a player in the last month or so. And that's not a bad thing. Like, I'm not saying that I'm not enjoying these games, because I really am, because every single day the standings are jumping, both conferences really, from seeds 4 through seed 6, or I'm sorry, yes, seed 6 in the Eastern Conference and everywhere out West. So we're still having great games that matter. But as far as looking at a team and watching the Sacramento Kings beat up on the Milwaukee Bucks the other night, I watched that entire game and I looked at my notes and I said, okay. You know what I'm saying? It was a fun and exciting game. De'Aaron Fox looked phenomenal. Domantas Sabonis looked phenomenal. We're going to talk about Sabonis a little bit later in this episode. But I didn't learn anything. And because the way I try to structure these episodes is mostly about what I've seen and what I've learned, I was kind of at a loss trying to figure out real ideas. So we asked y'all for them, basically. Because this is not a show where it's like it's watch and react. I mean, maybe a little bit. But that's not really what this is. So I don't want to just watch these games and say, hey, when Sabonis and Fox did this against the Bucks, this is what's successful, this is what's not successful. Because when we think about it, those two teams, when it matters the most, is probably not going to see each other. I open money that both of those teams don't make it to the finals. But definitely one of those teams is not making it. And I'm not going to say which one I'm thinking. All I can ask for you in today's episode is leave a like, subscribe. And if you're still here, be open-minded with some of these questions. Are we ready? All right, let's get into it. This one comes from Cooked by Riley. And part of me did not want to add this question to it. And I'm actually opening the show with it because it is a good question. But anybody that's getting cooked by blank, I just immediately think you're a Twitter troll. Especially when the profile picture is your favorite player. Riley, you might be a dope Twitter user. I don't know. You gave me a good question. But I'm just saying, if I was going to give you one tip, it's to change that app, my brother. Or my sister. Riley is one of those names. It could be either of the two. The question is, if you were commissioner of the NBA for a day, what would you do? And I thought for a long time about this one. And I came up, I wanted to make it a solid 10 things, but I really came up with 9 different changes I would make for the association. I'm sure some of y'all ain't gonna love some of these, but I'm gonna do what I gotta do. The first one, I want to remove the charge as something that happens in basketball. It does not, in my opinion, hold a bunch of value. What we see, and though this is an extreme case, it doesn't happen as often as it may seem, but we do see injuries that are avoidable because someone is slipping under and trying to draw a charge. In reality, those 2 points might not mean nothing. Legal defensive jumping straight up as if you're Roy Hibbert probably is more impactful than you trying to draw a charge and then you fall in, somebody hitting their elbow and boom, they're out for 6 to 8 weeks. Okay, I would remove the charge completely. We've just seen too many freak accidents and all of that is avoidable. Number two, I would adjust the play-in. This is something I've maybe mentioned on this channel before, but the play-in should have a gap between who plays and who doesn't. For example, out west, the play-in works perfectly. Between the 9 and the 10, it's a half a game difference in a lot of the cases. And between the 7 and the 8, it's not that much difference, right? I don't feel bad if the Warriors make the playoffs by winning two games. I don't feel bad if the Lakers make the playoffs by winning two games. But I'd feel terrible if the Atlanta Hawks made it. I'd feel terrible if the Bulls made it, because there is a 5-game difference between them and the 8th seed. 5 games is a ton in the association. Why should that 9 or 10th seed have a chance to make the playoffs when there's a 5-game difference between them and the 7th seed and them and the 8th seed? I don't know. The first time this was all incorporated, when we talk about the play-in tournament, it was when we were in the bubble, and there was this. I think it was like a 3-game difference. If you were within 3 games, the play-in is on. If you were 3.5 games out, so long, you can leave Disney right now. And that's kind of where my head is at. I think I would change it to a 3-game gap between the 8th seed and the 9th seed for it to trigger a play-in. Because these teams, and I'm looking off to my left because the Bulls are playing the Pacers right now. These teams aren't nearly as good as the 78th seed. And in the game of basketball, anything can happen, right? Dyer DeRozan could come out and scream her head off, and then boom, the Raptors lose a game. If Max Strus don't turn into Superman last year in the last 4 minutes of the game versus the Bulls in the play-in, then Miami Heat don't make it at all. Like, there's just too much variance in the 1-game elimination, or in a 9 or 10 seed situation, 2 games to win it. So I would get rid of that. Number 3 is I would change the entry age to the NBA 18. Now, the people that don't agree with this is like, the NBA is already too young. We're seeing so many people come into the league that aren't necessarily ready for the game. And trust, I understand that. And I honestly believe you in that. I agree with you with that. But if a team is willing to give an 18-year-old person millions of dollars to come play professional sports, they should be able to. If the Bulls, I'm going to keep using the Bulls as an example, because if I use any other team as an example, their fans are in the comment section talking about, why does he always use me? I'm looking at you Wizards fans. If the Bulls drafted a kid when he's 18 years old and he turns out to not be good, that is on the franchise that used that pick. If somebody is willing to give a kid millions of dollars to do it, then they should be able to. And this should be on the NBA team's scouting department to determine if this 18-year-old is worth investing in, right? a prime example of this is Perry Jones III. Perry Jones III was a freak of nature out of high school. And I promise you, if he was able to make it into the draft, declare for the draft, he would have got drafted very, very high. We know that he went on to Baylor? He went off to Baylor. And came to the NBA eventually. And I remember when he ended up in OKC, I was like, oh my God, they got 2 Kevin Durants. That was the younger me. They got 2 Kevin Durants. I remember the hoop mixtape. I was like, no, that's KD 2.0. But if he would have got drafted, he would have set his family up for the future. You know what I'm saying? Because out of high school, that is where the hype was. So I'm just trying to get these kids an opportunity to have generational wealth. I know there are other options, right? You can go overseas. Shout out to Brandon Jennings and LaMelo Ball for doing that. Now you could go to the G League Ignite. Shout out to School Henderson, Kaminga, and so on and so on. You could go play overtime like the Thompson Twins. There are other routes. Ain't no route better than going straight old to the NBA. So I would open it up to 18 years old. Number 4 on my list. I wanna remove one timeout. Just one. Instead of 6, we get 5. Flow of the game should be a little bit better. Less stoppage of play. I mean, this sport just has a lot of it at the end of the day. I've been watching a lot of soccer and stuff, and that's one of my favorite things about the game of soccer or football, is that it's going to be 45 minutes minimum of straight cardio in a lot of cases. My least favorite thing is watching a game and it goes 0-0, but it's 45 minutes of nonstop action. And I just think with 6 timeouts, and I know some of them get lost once it hits 2 minutes or so on and so forth, just remove one timeout. 5, I would get way stricter on flopping. Every year they talk about how they're changing the flopping rules, and they're gonna really put the hammer down, and they will for 2 weeks. And then people are back flailing because it's just not a priority. It will become a priority if Kenny Beecham was the commissioner of the league for one day. Number 6, I would completely eliminate the swing fouls. Some of the people that do it the best is DeMar DeRozan might be the best in the game outside of James Harden. James Harden prime was the king of this. But when you have the ball, you hold it low and swing it through to draw contact and go up, even though that's not a natural shooting motion, but you know you're going to get the foul. Eliminate that. completely. I am so tired of it. It's got to the point where it was James Harden at the top, and then you have people like DeMar DeRozan. You have other stars doing it. And nowadays, eighth man on a rotation is doing it. We like, oh, no, we've gone too far. We've gone too far if backup small forward is doing it now. So I would completely eliminate that. Number seven is probably the most controversial one. Have all-star voting for all of the events. Put it in the CBA that if you are voted to participate in the dunk contest, you do it. That's basically what it is for the all-star game. You see people go in, Jimmy Butler played 2 minutes in the all-star game. He did his part. He made it there. He played his minutes. I want it so that we can bring back All-Star Weekend. And part of that is mandating who is in it and who's not. Just like we mandate all of the other stuff. Like, I know it's supposed to be a fun weekend, but man, I want to see the fans vote for Zion Williams. Can you imagine how fun voting would be if we were voting on three-point shooters? If we were voting on the dunkers? Skills challenge, rookie sophomores, I couldn't care less about that stuff. But like the real tentpole events, voting for. Number eight. Enforce the excessive carries. There was a clip. Oh, man. Maybe it was Jaylen Brown sitting at the top of the key. He's dribbling. And I mean, he's straight up palming the ball every time he dribbles. And now I understand that the carry is a very important part of our game. But I mean the ones that you got the full hand under the basketball. Those are the ones I need to eliminate. And it doesn't happen as often as Twitter will make you think, but I just want to eliminate it completely because a carry is in the rule book. And the very last one, and I know we've been going a long time on one question, but this was my favorite one. Shout out to Riley. Let teams and or players determine the stoppage of play after a 24-second shot clock violation, right? You play great defense for 22 and a half seconds and the opposing team throw up a shot that airball, it's whistle, whistle, whistle. You don't get to benefit on maybe having numbers. You don't get to benefit on a fast break if you play defense for 24 seconds. Instead, it's a stoppage of play. Now, the team that just had an awful offensive possession get to set up their defense. And we just play defense to not only prevent them from scoring, but we want it so that we can capitalize on that. So how do we mandate that? I think if they airball and we take the ball and we go, then no whistle. But if we take the ball and we hold it, then that is a turnover stoppage of play. Those are the nine things I would change. You let me know in the comment section what you agree with, what you disagree with. What did I miss? Because I know there are a lot of different rules that can be incorporated, like a one-on-one tournament. We talked with Jason Tatum about it potentially happening one day. Like, yeah, I would love to see that. You let me know. The second question, I don't know how to pronounce it, my boy. You got some X's in here, but I see Alonzo Ball. Yeah, you feeling the same way I am, my boy. Who is on your, I think he probably thought this was a episode with the guys, who is on your all-NBA / all-defensive team this season? Now, I am still tinkering with all of this. I won't have my official ballot until maybe 2 weeks left of the NBA season. I mean, not official ballot because the NBA don't be hitting me up like that. But, like, we will do an episode of the Kenny Beecham podcast where we go and we give you my official ballot, right? But I do have some locks and some on the bubble type players. Now, this year, all defensive team is just like all NBA team. There are zero positions, which makes it interesting. And I thought when they announced this that it was going to open up the gates to be like five centers on all defensive first team. And as I was doing my research, trying to figure out who's on what, I found out that it's going to play itself relatively the same as some of the other years, I would assume. Here are my absolute locks to make an all-defensive team this year. There's nothing that can happen in the last 17 games of the season to make me change my mind about these players defensively. Now, I also took a consideration games played because that matters this year. 65 games is the minimum to make any award except for, I think, all rookie. And I think rookie of the year doesn't have that. But all the other ones that do. So if I'm missing a name and you're like, oh my God, he's missing that, it's probably because they won't hit the 65-game threshold. Okay. Absolute lock, Alex Caruso. Don't need to talk about it. We did when we did the Kenny Beecham All-Stars. The Kenny For Real All-Stars, sorry. The second guy, we have Derek White. Don't need to talk about it. Same thing as Alex Caruso. We talked about him about a couple weeks ago. Third guy, and this guy should have made it last year if you ask me, but it usually takes a little bit of time for an all-defensive team, especially for a younger player to really be recognized by the people with the ballots, Herb Jones is an absolute lock for me. I think that if Herb Jones does not make an all defensive team, something is completely wrong, because the Pelicans are still one of the top 10 defenses of basketball. And if you look at their roster on paper, you look at the players that they're playing in their starting lineup, CJ, Brandon Ingram, Zion, Herb Jones, and Valanciunas, there are not many people out there that on paper you look at to be positive to above average defenders. And Herb is a guy that is really not on Herb. That is him. That is what he does. He locks up your best player on a nightly basis. Rudy Gobert, lock. He's a DPOY. Wimby, he's a lock for me. And this is different, right? This is not very often where you see somebody make an all-defensive team where their defense is at the bottom third of the league, but that's just the Wimby thing. Wimby's numbers are just ridiculous when he's on the court. He just has really, 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 really bad teammates right now. Absolute lock. Bam Adebayo. It's been a lock for me for a couple of years now. Nothing has really changed. And my last absolute lock is Anthony Davis. I mentioned this on Numbers on the Board, my other podcast, but Anthony Davis this year is in a very weird spot because the on-off numbers say that the defense is better without him. That's just not true. You know what I'm saying? This is where we have to balance the advanced stats and the eye test, because if you're watching Anthony Davis, you know he's one of the more impactful defensive players in all of basketball. So I'm throwing out those advanced stats because my eyes are telling me that this is one of his best defensive seasons of his entire career. Those are my locks. Now, that is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So that means I have three different spots for these people, and I don't know who's getting what. And I got 16-ish games to figure it out. Jared Allen, Giannis Antetokounmpo, Kawhi Leonard, Jalen Suggs, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Chet Holmgren, Anthony Edwards, Jaden McDaniels. 8 names for 3 spots. I don't know who's going to make it. I don't know. Jaden McDaniels is close to a lock for me. I still got to figure that out. He's very close to a lock. And same thing with Jalen Suggs. But again, who knows? Here's my all-NBA locks. SGA, Luka Doncic, Giannis, Jokic, Kevin Durant. I have Kevin Durant on here twice, by the way. Kevin Durant and KD. That must be different people. Anthony Davis, Bron, Kawhi Leonard. Those are my 8 locks. We're talking about a 15-player thing. Some people like a Donovan Mitchell, who would be a lock. He doesn't hit the requirements. We're going to talk about that later in the episode. Devin Booker doesn't meet the requirements. Tyrese Halliburton doesn't meet the requirements. So, you know, some circumstances to that, or some consequences. Here are some other candidates. Jaylen Brown, Domantas Sabonis, Jalen Brunson, Paolo Banchero, Karl-Anthony Towns still needs like 5 more games. And he normally wouldn't be on his list because he's out with a meniscus. But he tweeted the other day, the Chamber, Dragon Ball Z Chamber. We're going to talk about some anime, man, because, man, it was a sad day in the anime community the last week. But Karl-Anthony Towns, will he be back for those last 5 games? I don't know. And, of course, Wardell Stephen Curry. Thank you for the question, Mr. Lonzo Ball profile picture. Next one comes from my boy Smalls. He's been a viewer for probably 12, 13 years. Like, no joke. He's been my guy. You let it be known many times that you aren't a college basketball fan. What does college have to do to make you start watching prior to March Madness? I don't think it's really anything they could do. The reality is that the timelines are on the same time as my NBA season, right? My job has been NBA for the last 6 years, ish. So if you have Duke playing on one time, and let's say they tip off at 7, and then the Lakers are on the East Coast, they tip off at 7. My job is saying I need to watch the Lakers because there's nothing that's going to happen in this Duke game that's going to be beneficial to what I do for work. So it's nothing necessarily about college basketball, the product, but it's just I have to watch what I have to watch, you know? In March Madness, it's basically what we mentioned at the top of the show, where we're at the part of the season where you're not learning anything. So I'm okay with sacrificing some hours of watching NBA ball, because March Madness is at the perfect time. You know, I actually enjoy watching other people talk or break down the college basketball game. But for me, I just don't have the time to prioritize watching regular season college basketball stuff. That's really all it is, Brady. Frazier, the talk around the Charlotte Hornets is that LaMelo Ball is no longer the franchise building block and that it instead should be Brandon Miller. What is your take? I also did hear that this was the talk of the town in Charlotte. And I personally don't really understand it, right? The only argument against keeping LaMelo Ball is that he's injured every single season. He has definitely been injury prone. Other than his one All-Star season, he's missed more than half of the seasons, and I think the last 3. So it's been rough to keep him on the court. I don't understand this notion of getting rid of an, again, LaMelo Ball is still extremely young. I don't know how many of y'all recognize how young LaMelo really is. Getting rid of a young all-star caliber when he's playing point guard. I mean, the Charlotte Hornets have been in a rebuild for a very long time. You trade LaMelo Ball away, I'm assuming you're trading him away for draft capital. Are we going to tell our fans that we're going to hit another reset if we trade LaMelo Ball? It's not like LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller can't coexist. They've played less than 500 minutes together this season. And the numbers are like a -6 net rating, but it's the goddamn Charlotte Hornets. Nobody has a pod. No combination of two players have a positive net rating on the Charlotte Hornets. It's just, we just don't have a big enough sample size to say that these two players shouldn't or can't coexist. And LaMelo Ball just signed his extension. I don't see the real need to try to get off LaMelo Ball right now. Because if LaMelo has a healthy season, guess what? The Charlotte Hornets were a 500-ish team. And I know 500 is not where you want to be, Charlotte, but it's a hell of a lot better than hitting a reset and winning another 20 games. So I would say let these boys play together, because I think they play together. Again, I think they could potentially play together very well down the line. It just doesn't make sense to me. Unless you get a godfather offer from the Spurs. Who else could potentially... You get a godfather offer from the Orlando Magic. Just a team that desperately needs a point guard. I don't see a reason to trade LaMelo Ball. It would just be doing something to do it. Now, they have new management. They're probably going to have a new coach coming in. And traditionally, when you have new management, you kind of clean house of what the previous regime has done. But LaMelo, in my opinion, is better than what the general consensus is. And I do believe that he has the tools to be an average defender. Sometimes that's all you can really ask for, right? Luka Doncic has turned himself into like an average defender because he's 6'6", 6'7", and when he tries, that's good enough. Melo hasn't had a lot of reps of trying. Not a ton of them. He's had a few. Game-winning stop against the Pacers earlier this season. Like, we know he could do it, but as stupid as it sounds, he hasn't been incentivized to do it because this team has been poorly ran and he doesn't have pieces around him. I'm just team keep LaMelo for the now. Give it another at least half a season, a full season, to see if him and Brandon Miller can coexist. And if not, then sure. But I don't see a world where these two guys can't play together. I mentioned I'm watching my Bulls on this left monitor. They're down by 4 going into halftime. I was looking at on FanDuel Sportsbook, and I was just looking at the odds of the awards. A couple weeks ago, we talked about how pretty much every single award other than the MVP was wrapped up. And in that, we talked about the most improved player. And in that time, Tyrese Maxey was a -400 to win the award. I thought that was wraps. Things have shifted, ladies and gentlemen. He's only a -140, a 155 to win it. And my boy, Jacoby White is second at a +115. There's a real world where Kobe can sneak up and take the most improved player award. And I won't be complaining, because I personally like when the award goes from a player that is a average starter or below average starter, or in Kobe White's case, not even a starter, and can blossom to something more. I'm not a big fan of he's already really good and now he's an all-star, right? We saw that a couple years back with Ja Morant. I like the Lauri Markkanen story more. That's a perfect example. He was an average starter, and then boom, now he's a lot better. And now I guess Kobe White could do it in these last 15 or so games. Now, the bad thing is Kobe White hasn't been shooting it as great as he was pre-All-Star. He's having like shooting like 28% since the All-Star break. Give it time. Kobe, I believe in you. FanDuel is putting the ball in your court for the rest of the NBA season, because new customers get $200 in bonus bets with any $5 winning bet. That's $200 if your bet wins. Bet on the NBA with a wide range of bets, like quick bets, same game parlays, and player props. Personally, I like taking the money line of one of the bottom feeder teams, especially when they're going against a contender. So visit FanDuel.com/Kenny and make your first bet a layup. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. First online real money wager only. $5 pregame money line wager required. First online real money wager only. $10 first deposit required. Bonus issued with non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. See terms at sportsbooks.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit fanduel.com/RG. and Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Virginia. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana. 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas. 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. Or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinepa.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts. Or call 1-877-8-HOPE-NEW-YORK or text HOPE-NEW-YORK in New York. This next one comes from Joseph, and this is where we start to get outside of the NBA a little bit, by the way. And this is actually a personal question that I think is maybe interesting to some people. I don't know. I liked it. What goes into the process of naming a child? Am I getting the right demographic? Do y'all care about this? So how did you stumble upon the name Avery, and which of you chose it? Naming a child is extremely, extremely difficult. Some people have it already. Some people, from the moment they were a kid, they know that when I have a child, I'm going to name the child this. I'm going to name the child that. Me and my now wife, we had a name in mind. You know, me and my wife have been dating for a decade now. It's been a very long time, right? And once you hit like a year five, year six, you start to think about one day we will start a family. And the name we had was Kendall. And my family, every single one of me and my siblings have something K-E-N in our name. My dad name is Kenneth. My name is Kentrell. And it's just been that way. My sister Madison, her middle name is Kennedy. Like, that's just the way it is. Everybody has a K-E-N somewhere near. So I was like, first name Kendall for my daughter. And then the name Avery came up. And there's a video on my YouTube channel, my gaming YouTube channel. You can check. It's titled like, I Let My Girlfriend Draft My Team. And in that, she's drafting my team and she comes across the name Avery Bradley. And she says, "Ooh, I like that name." Little did we know, in 5 years, we would be naming our daughter, or I guess 4 years, we'd be naming our daughter Avery. That was like the first nugget. We didn't think anything of it. We used to live in this place and there was a park down the street named Avery Park. We lived there for 3 years. For 2 years, I had never noticed the name of that park. For two straight years. We got pregnant and I'm driving past the park every day. And now I'm noticing that this park name is Avery. I'm like, oh, I like that name. I like that name. And then the last thing, and if you ask her, this is the first thing she's gonna say. She is a Grey's Anatomy fan. And I guess there's a character named Jackson Avery on there. So she will tell you that she named our daughter after a Grey's Anatomy character. That's not the truth. It's a coincidence. We both ended up seeing Avery a bunch. It's just one of those things where, like, you know how people get fixated on numbers sometimes? I had this in my life. The number 13 is very important to me. And I felt like I was seeing a number 13 a lot. But the reality is you're not seeing it a lot. It's just a number that you care about, so you become cognizant of when it comes up. And I feel like that's what Avery was, because we started to like the name Avery, and then we would turn on the TV and an actor's name was something Avery or Avery something. Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Uncle Phil. I don't remember if this is very disrespectful, and I apologize. I don't remember if his first name or his last name is Avery. Watch a Fresh Prince and it pops up. I'm like, really? It's everywhere. That's our daughter's name now. So. So the story is, maybe it was Avery Bradley. Maybe it was Jackson Avery. I don't know. Vontae says, what was your favorite moment of the season up to now? He did change it and said favorite moments. So I give you a few. Here are my favorite moments of the season so far. My number one moment of the year so far is the Celtics versus Pacers in-season tournament game. That was oh my God. That was the best regular season energy you're probably going to get in the NBA. You know, we get that energy come postseason, right? But as far as regular season go, the crowd was jumping. It was a close game. It came down to the last couple shots. And we're trying to figure out if the in-season tournament is real. Is it something we should care about? And then that happened. Adam Silver was having so much fun. Oh, we came up with the in-season tournament, and this is the game we get in the winner go home game. Perfect. In-season tournament is here to stay for the foreseeable future because of this energy. And also was it like a, hey, I'm here moment for my boy Tyrese Halliburton, which is pretty dope. My second moment, we've had 2 70-point games this season. The Luka one was more memorable for me because I watched that entire game. Well, I'm sorry. I got in that game in the end of the first quarter, and I watched it from there on, and then, of course, went back to watch that first quarter. And just to see him meticulously pick apart the Atlanta Hawks over and over with a shot, with a pass, with a so on and so forth. And again, Joel Embiid 70 is amazing too, but that one was a little bit higher for me as far as my viewing experience. The next one, was when OKC played against the Warriors and Chet Holmgren hit that shot in the corner to send it to overtime. And then overtime came around and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander put on his backpack and scored like almost all of the points. The reason that was so impactful, we were having Friendsgiving here in my house, and we got a notification that the game was close with a couple minutes ago, and we all tuned in. And this is me and the guys, and we all love basketball. So instead of us playing spades, we dropped the spades game. We went to the TV to watch a game tying shot to send it to OT and then watch Shai be Shai. And that was amazing. And the last one I have is Ja's first game back. I'm so sad that we only basically got, 5 games of Ja Morant this season. But that first game back was like a movie. It really was. Down by so-and-so points, Ja Morant put on the backpack, hit the game one shot. He's looking at the crowd and saying, I'm back. It's perfect. Those are my top moments. It was hard for me not to put a Kobe White moment in, but I decided not to.
So, Kenny, those were all great moments. The one that was probably most painful for me, but do you think Jokic's game winner against the Warriors was the best shot of his career, the best moment of his career regular season?
Regular season-wise, for sure. The shot wasn't what made it so great. It was the reaction to the shot, because we don't get to see Big Yoke care like that. I mean, he celebrated then more than when the final buzzer happened after the finals. And what was that? A little bit less than half court heave that went in right there?
Yep, like, off glass.
That is a great moment. And I'm glad you brought it up. I'm mad that I didn't put that there. But that was a beautiful, beautiful moment. The next one comes from Aiden. Just started golfing. Only reason I'm laughing is this is the only thing I think about nowadays. 24/7 is golf. I just started golfing about 6 months ago, and I've been hitting my irons well, but I'm struggling with just about everything else. I know you have started golfing. What is your strengths and what are your weaknesses as a beginner? Now, for the people at home, I started golfing maybe 3 weeks ago, almost 3 weeks ago to the day, actually, because today was supposed to be my third session with my coach. I am with you, Aiden. I am as good as you can be with your irons 3 weeks in. Obviously, I'm not Tiger, I'm not Rory, I'm not Spieth, but my iron game is significantly better than everything else. My biggest weakness is hitting the driver off the tee. I'm just struggling. I actually went to the range today, and I had a decent session, but still nothing nearly as good as I wanted to be. In due time, you know, part of it is me being small stature and not having a bunch of upper body strength or core strength, and I'm working on that every single day. But I also slice a ton. I slice a ton with my driver, and I'm working on making my swing a lot more fluid to see the ball go straight. I think today I hit it. My best swing off the tee was 200, and I think it deviated to the right about 17 degrees, which was decent for me. Like, I take that, but then the very next swing was awful. So I just need to find some type of consistency there. I'm putting, obviously, is really tough. No matter what level you're at, putting is going to be tough. And at this point in time, I'm doing something golf related every single day. Like, the last couple of days here in Chicago have been beautiful. I've gone to the outdoor range. If it's not beautiful, I have a membership at a local simulator. I'll go there. And if that's not a route, I have a pitching or chipping net in my basement. Some people might say it's becoming a problem, but I never in my years thought it would be something that I wanted to do. And I was heavily influenced by when I was at the SoFi event where I did the Jason Tatum interview. I talked to multiple people there, and they were basically saying something that like golf is looking for more creators of color. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I never even thought about golf as an option. And I gave it a try. I am a guy that, as far as hobby goes, I will give everything a try as long as my life is not dead. Don't ask me to goddamn jump out of no plane, but I will give it a try. And there's been a lot of hobbies that I've tried for a week and I'm saying, that's not for me. Try for a week, that's not for me. Golf has been something that is for me. And my competitive nature wants me to be leagues ahead of my friend group. And I think that's why I'm working every single day. I want to pull up to a course, and I have not played a real course. You said just a bunch of virtual courses and then hitting the green, hitting the driving range. I want, once we go to a course collectively as a friend group in a while, in like a couple of weeks or a month or so, I want to stand out. Those other guys ain't putting the hours I'm putting in. I played a course earlier today, again, virtual course earlier today. And I didn't get to play the full nine because I had to come back to work. I mean, I do still work, believe it or not. I know I talk about golf a lot at this point. In my seven holes that I played, I shot 44, and that's plus 15. Which for me, starting 3 weeks ago, I felt really good about this. I got a couple bogeys in here. Like, I got a couple. Anyway, keep up with it, Aiden. Maybe we'll see each other at the win when we play against each other, baby, because I'm trying to get to Steph Curry's golf tournament in 5 years or something. I'm just saying, I'm working. The next one comes from the house that Kami built. Which teams have the brightest, middest, and bleakest futures in the NBA? The brightest future was the easiest question I could answer. It is the OKC Thunder. They're right now one of the top two seeds in basketball, depending on when you watch this. And they're simultaneously like the third youngest team in basketball with 17 first-round picks for the next 5 years. The brightest future by far. If Sam Presti wants to buy, he can. If he wants to just stand pat, he could, because that's how much talent he has on his roster. And I think that they're good enough to do some, make some noise this year, and then they'll only get better and better and better. At least that's what the mindset is at. The mid is future. Now, I want people to recognize what mid is, right? Mid, people be using it wrong. You know what I'm saying? Mid is literally middle of the pack. At least that's the way I always interpret it. You know, bleakest is like where my Bulls is my answer for the bleakest. You know, the Bulls aren't mid. They're worse than mid as far as futures goes. You know what I'm saying? Like, they're mid. Like, I think they're two games under 500. That's somewhat mid. It's about average. But we talk about the future. You talk about what their front office has done over the last couple seasons. That's mid. The Nets also have a very bleak future. But I'm thinking about mid. And the only reason I'm saying this is because I don't know where the mindset of Masai Ujiri is at. It might be the Toronto Raptors. You make some trades to get players versus draft capital, which is interesting. It seems like they're always trying to stay somewhat competitive. And maybe he's trying to replicate the thing that he did a few years back. We're like, we're competitive. We're going to make the playoffs every year. And then the time will come for us to make the splash, and we will. I'm going to say they have one of the middest futures, where I think that they are a team that's probably teetering around 500 for the next couple seasons, or hell, worse, for the next couple seasons until something really, really clicks. A few more left. This one comes from Jordan Johnson. Kenny, if you had to build a basketball team of One Piece characters, give us your starting five and why. Jordan, I've seen you comment down below a few different times of the tweets and stuff. I want to say I appreciate you, because you had a way to bridge some of my special interests. One Piece and basketball. I have basketball tattoos. I have One Piece tattoos, baby. These two things are very important to me. You ready? And I thought, out of all of the questions, question number one, I thought about for a long time if I was commissioner. I thought about this one almost equally as long, Jordan. And I'm sad that I feel like my roster ain't too crazy, but here it is. I'm going to start off with a random character in the show named Foxy. Foxy has the devil fruit that can slow down anybody that he wants to for 30 seconds. And I'm thinking about for the basketball thing, hell, he do that boom, boom, boom for five people with 24-second shot clock. We can just run around and score basket after basket after basket because everybody else on your opposing team is moving in slow-mo. He's almost too powerful to be on the team based on his ability. That's not maybe as powerful in the One Piece world, but in the basketball terms, that is OP. My shooting guard is going to be Luffy. I need a captain. I mean, Space Jam showed us that anybody, if you can stretch your arm, you can score from anywhere. And Luffy can be dunking from the other basket if he really wants to. And he's the king of the pirates. We need a captain on the scene. My small four is Robin. Robin's ability to just use her hands or grow hands. I don't really know how it works. Let's be right. And I don't know that I'm not, I guess, that deep into One Piece where I know the name of the moves like some people do. But the idea of her being able to use multiple hands and grow hands and make hands come out of anywhere, like, that is two-way ability at its finest. We talking about OG Anunoby level stopper. And then also could score on the other side because she could just make her hands appear anywhere. Oh, above the basket. Oh, Foxy slow everybody down. Luffy throws the pass or just hands it to Robin 1 foot away from the basket. She just drop it in. She just has a hand on the top of the rim and she just getting the ball. She's dropping it in over and over and over. And then again, also an amazing defender. The next one is Bluno. Bluno was one of the early arcs, and his ability was, his Devil Fruit ability was to open doors anywhere he wanted. And I'm looking at him as strictly as offensive threat. Strictly open up a door right under the basket, layup. Open up a door right under the basket, layup. Open up a door for one of his teammates, layup. Like, come on, how are you stopping our team? And then my center is Kuma. Because he has the ability to repel anything that's thrown at him. I am sitting him at the basket like he's Rudy Gobert. And anytime you take a shot, repel, repel, repel. And you saw how he defended the sunset, right? You see how he defended the ship, right? I said Sunset Sunny, right? That's my starting five. Here's some people that I also consider. Usopp, Sniper King, three-point shooter. He'll be the Steph Curry of the league. But I don't trust him defensively. Everybody else, I feel pretty good about their defensive abilities. Usopp don't have that. Pika, as a backup center, the man was literally like 500 feet tall. Just sit him under the basket. He'll make it work. And then last one, and bear with me. I don't watch One Piece. I read One Piece. So some of these names I've never heard them being said. So Kizaru, fastest speed of light. He's De'Aaron Fox, and I think he's a brother. I think I could be wrong. He's got darker skin and curly hair. I think he's a brother. You know what I'm saying? He's got some advantages being fast as the speed of light if necessary. I also thought about some other people. I wanted to get my boy Brooke on the roster, but like, he's made of bones. What the hell is he going to do on the basketball team other than sing for us, I guess? You know, it's a lot of people that you could put here, but I needed Luffy and I needed Foxy. Those are my two captains. They're just unmessable. Next one comes from Matt. Which audience would you wish to expand to in the future? This is actually a conversation I had with my dad the other day. Every once in a while, me and my dad just chat on the phone for hours or an hour or so. And we were talking about my career and what the next step of it is. And right now, I am widely known as one of the basketball guys, right? There's a famous screenshot of the Stephen A. Smith show that the bottom third, the card says Kenny Knows Ball. One of my favorite pictures to bring up just randomly. And I'm okay with being a basketball guy, right? I spend so much time. This is a sport that I love more than any other sport. But my dad was like, hey, if you want to be one of one, which again is one of my goals, you can't just be the basketball guy. You have to be able to do football if necessary. You got to be able to do basically that. I mean, those are the two major sports when it comes to sports media. I do a little bit of baseball, you know, here and there. But I have to be more comfortable with doing sports outside of ball. And I think that's the next thing. I don't know how or when that will happen. Maybe right now is the perfect time because we're in NFL free agency. It's time to learn the NFL. I mean, I know football. I know the game of football. I'm not completely oblivious. And I know a decent amount of players and stuff like that. But as far as I've never felt comfortable enough to express opinions about the sport because I feel like I'm still a novice. There's still so much I don't know. I feel the same way about a soccer, a sport that I've been getting into since the World Cup. I could talk soccer on a casual level, but if as far as like creating content or feeling comfortable talking to people that are really in the know, I'm not there just yet. And I think the next audience I want to obtain is somewhere in the realm of football. I've done a damn good job of building a community of basketball lovers, but football is like 10 times bigger than basketball on a national level. And if I want to really be number one, I think my dad is right. And I need to go out there and grasp the football market one way or another. At least stick my toe in. That's all. And the last question I have from the audience, again, thank you to everybody that submitted a question, is from Tony Chopper Jr., another One Piece fan. Thoughts on the amount of players ineligible for awards with the new minimum in place? I love the 65-game rule. I think it's fair. I genuinely think it's fair to ask NBA players to play 80%+ of the NBA season. Not 90%, not 95%. The only one that really hurts is the Donovan Mitchell one because I said this before, but you cannot tell the story of the 2023-2024 season without mentioning the name Donovan Mitchell. And some of that might get lost to history because people look at Basketball Reference, they look at all NBA teams, they look at this, they look at that, right? And Donovan Mitchell not being on there does suck. But all the other ones, I don't feel too terrible about. Some of them are bad breaks. And I guess a part of the rule book, so you can appeal some of it. If you end up with 63, then you can appeal and say, hey, these two games I missed because of this. These two games I missed because of this. So I am still a big fan of this rule, at least into the foreseeable future, once we get more data. Because some people were asking about the injuries. And I don't know if the data proves that we're having more injuries. They just might be amplified because of the new rule, right? I don't know if we have more injuries this year than last year. I don't know what the data says, but I'm still in favor of this. The only downside of this, and this is actually from Zach Lowe, this is something I didn't even think about, but Zach Lowe said it, is the consequence of this is that the NBA third team are going to have players that probably shouldn't be on third team, and that's going to make them super max eligible, and that might hinder some of your favorite franchises. That's the only downside to it, and we're going to have to see that in real time if it ever comes across. The last couple questions we get are going to be from producer Greg. We don't have Greg Eye Test Takes, but he's coming back on the show.
All right, Kenny, I only have two for you. First, so you've guested on lots of really cool shows. You've been on First Take. You've done lots of cool shows. I think you've been on JJ Redick's podcast.
Yep.
Which has been your favorite show to guest on?
It definitely was JJ's show. And I think part of that was it was relatively early in like my social media come up. And I still don't know the story of how they found him and Tommy found my content or this and that. It was also fairly early in their content creation journey. And one thing you're going to notice about some of my appearances, it will be like that. Stephen A. Smith's show has only been going for a couple of weeks. He's looking for some new talent to come on. Then I make an appearance. JJ Redick's show has only been going on for a few months. Need some new talent. Let's go on. And I'm okay with that. I don't care. Get me on episode 3, 5 to whatever. But I think it was JJ's because, I don't know, JJ and Tommy just have a way of talking about the sport. And I think we have just a lot of similar opinions. So it was kind of cool to bounce some things off of those guys. And also cool because sometimes you do an appearance and that's what it is. It's the appearance. You may never talk to those people again. Tommy and JJ has always been really cool. You know, every once in a while I text Tommy or Tommy will text me. And then after I made an appearance on their show, they were doing a live show in Brooklyn. They're like, Kenny, man, if you're in New York, let us know. I was not in New York. I booked the ticket to go because I was like, how many opportunities do you get to like talk to NBA players? So I was like, oh, yeah, I am going to be in Brooklyn at this time. And knowing I wasn't, right? And they were doing a live show. And I got to meet Marques Brownlee, who is a creator that I like. I really enjoy his content. I enjoy the way he creates his content, the quality of stuff. So I got to pick his brain for a little bit. And on my way to New York to do this shoot and everything with them, JJ announced his retirement. It was like I'm on a flight and I had just bought the Wi-Fi for this hour and a half flight, and I get the notification JJ Redick retires from the NBA, and I tweet from my burner account. From the burner account, at this time the burner account don't even got no followers really, but I tweet I'm on my way to see JJ and he announced this. I had no idea, and somehow JJ found saw the tweet, and when I landed and we chatted about it and everything. So It was 100% Old Man in the Three was one of the more cooler experiences for sure.
All right, last one. Who is your favorite player in the NBA that averages less than 12 minutes per game?
You asked this, right? And I was like, all right, let me see who's eligible. There's not many people that are even eligible for this. So it has to be Robin Lopez. It has nothing to do with what he's doing this year. Because I can tell you, I don't know how many times I've watched Robin Lopez play basketball this year. But Robin Lopez has a way to get under people's skin like no other. And I love that about him. He's checking into a garbage time game. It's up by 20. He hits a hook shot, which again is a lost art in the NBA. So he's one of the few people that are still doing hook shots consistently. And he'll stir some tea and drink it. And I'm just like, if I was an opposing player, to see a guy that played no minutes in the first 44 and gets in, and now he's taunting us, I would feel some type of way. So I love that he'll do that. Like the Nas is another one for the memes. But a lot of people, if you're good enough to play, you typically are playing more than 15 minutes a game. So Robin, also formable, little place in my heart, even though he technically doesn't have a job anymore because he got traded, then released by the Kings a couple weeks ago. But it would probably have to be Robin. I want to say I appreciate everybody that submitted a question, NBA or non-NBA related. Mailbags are so super cool. It feels like I'm really just, I know every episode, I guess I'm chatting with y'all, but to a deeper level, because these are the things that you asked for me to talk about. You know what I'm saying? Leave a like, subscribe, go to Apple, Spotify, leave 5 stars if you're able, and I'll see y'all in a couple days.